Hello, and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from The Lancet Neurology. I'm Heather Brown, one of the senior editors at the journal.
And I'm Lauren Southwell, a senior assistant editor here at The Lancet.
For our April 2024 podcast, we're delighted to be joined by Jamie Steinmetz, Katrin Sear, Taryn Dewar, and Theo Voss to talk about their new paper reporting an important analysis of the global burden of conditions that affect the nervous system. Jamie, would you like to introduce yourself first?
Hi, thank you so much for having us. My name's Jamie Steinmetz. I'm a lead research scientist at the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation in Seattle, Washington, in the United States.
My name is Theo Voss. I'm a professor at the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington in Seattle, though I talk to you from my home country, the Netherlands.
My name is Taryn Dewar. I head the Brain Health Unit at the World Health Organization headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland.
Hi, everyone. My name is Katrin Sear. I'm a mental health specialist in WHO's Brain Health Unit, and I work with Taryn.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you very much for joining us today. So first of all, what was known about the burden of neurological disorders before your new analysis?
There are quite a few epidemiological studies that have been done across the world. But the good thing about and the beauty of the global burden of disease is it brings and synthesizes all of this evidence together. And in fact, the first neurology envelope study based on GBD 2016 data was published in 2019. And that study showed that neurological disorders are leading cause of disability adjusted life years. In a short form, we call them DALIs, and second leading cause of death. And for the whole community working in the area of brain health and neurology, that was an eye-opener. And I tell you why. Huge burden, but if you look in terms of the resources that are available in the countries, limited resources, workforce, shortage of specialists, especially in low-income countries, only one neurologist per a million population, lack of access to medicines, leading to high treatment gaps. So you have high burden, you have lack of resources, lack of services, huge treatment gap, and accompanied by stigma, discrimination that we see for many of these conditions. So big challenge that is being seen across the world because of these neurological conditions.
Why did you expand the number of conditions that were included, and how did you decide what to include?
Well, that's a very good question. First of all, like Taryn had said, the science has evolved and we now have much better data. But we also wanted to fully capture the broad spectrum of conditions that are covered by the new intersectoral global action plan on epilepsy and other neurological disorders, which member states approved in the World Health Assembly in 2022. And so we tried to expand the conditions. It's still not a perfect list, I'd say, but we're reporting the most comprehensive attempt possible. So what did we include or what did we add? First of all, some conditions that were previously not captured in the GBD. And those are Guillain-Barré syndrome, neurocysticercosis, or rabies. They were not previously captured in neurological disorder reports. Then we also wanted to reflect the life course approach that is very central to the new intersectoral global action plan. So we included conditions that affect neonatal or congenital conditions, and we also included neurodevelopmental conditions as they are defined in ICD-11. This includes autism spectrum disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or intellectual disability. Now, those are traditionally included under mental health, but because they have such a strong link to cognitive functioning or brain functioning, and they impact the nervous system, we decided to include them. And then lastly, the big new development or inclusion that we did was capturing conditions that are non-neurological, but do affect the nervous system. So what do I mean by that? So take, for instance, diabetes or malaria. They are metabolic or infectious conditions that can have quite a tremendous impact on the nervous system. If you think of diabetic neuropathy or cerebral malaria, by previously not accounting for the burden that they cause on nervous system health loss, we're underestimating the burden or the demand on health systems if you want to plan services for all people who require neurological care, right? So with this extension to also conditions such as infectious, metabolic or congenital or neonatal conditions and extracting only their burden on nervous systems, we were able to increase the number from 15 to 37 conditions now.
So for any listeners who might not be familiar with the GBD process, could you briefly tell us how you obtained your estimates?
An important principle we have working on the global burden of disease is that we want to make use of as much of the available data pertaining to a particular disease as we can get. We do large and repeated systematic reviews to identify published papers. We look at the gray literature, reports by statistical bureaus, etc., but also rely quite heavily on a large collaboration for the global burden of disease of more than 10,000 people in almost every country in the world. And by having these active collaborators, we gain access to data that otherwise would be difficult to obtain. The challenge is when you set that as your goal, that you have to deal with all the variations in which people collect data and the sort of case definitions that they will use. And you know, if you have data using different methods and different case definitions, they don't talk to each other. So we have a large effort of examining every data source, precisely documenting how people have done the data collection and for what entity they collected data. And then we make adjustments to data that are slightly less desirable in their methods or case definition, if you like. So we say we'd like everyone to collect data following these methods and this principle, but not everyone does that. So in order to make use of all the available data, we do a lot of adjustment of data before we put it into our statistical models. We also have a principle that we want to make estimates for every cell of age, sex, year, and country, or even subnational location. And for many countries, we will have sparse data sources or no data sources at all. Principle is, though, that we would rather make best possible estimates instead of leaving cells blank, because when we say, we leave a cell blank, then we tell policymakers, don't worry about this disease. So we think it's better to do our best to make a most plausible estimate rather than saying it's too hard, we're not making an estimate at all. And in order to do that, we make use of information that we have about diseases. What predicts how often people fall ill with a particular rare disease? You know, for instance, the well-known big effect of obesity on diabetes. So we make use of information on those predictors to guide our statistical models to make best possible estimates, even if there are few data to support making estimates for a particular country or region of the world.
So your paper includes a huge amount of new data, so it might be hard to choose, but what do you think are the most important results?
So we estimate that more than 40% of all people globally have some form of nervous system health loss. So obviously this is a very large proportion of the population. And beyond just thinking about prevalence, so number of people experiencing these conditions, we also look at summary measures of burden. for example, disability adjusted life years, or DALYs, as mentioned previously by Tarun. So this is a summary measure of health loss experienced by people who are living with these conditions, as well as life lost from these conditions. And what we find is that, you know, this grouping, whether the original 15 grouping that was published, grouping of 15 that was published a few years ago, or our expanded category, this is the leading group cause of DALYs in the Global Burden of Disease study. So again, just really emphasizing the impact of these conditions. We also looked at, you know, of these 37 conditions, what are the top contributors to health loss? And we found that kind of, around the world, those were stroke, neonatal encephalopathy, which is a consequence of birth asphyxia or trauma, migraine, dementia, diabetic neuropathy, meningitis, epilepsy, as well as the neurological consequences of preterm birth. And, you know, I think one thing that's striking about this is that, you know, these conditions are kind of more prevalent in different age groups that really cover the whole lifespan, you know, from the neonatal period all the way through older age. And so in kind of thinking about nervous system health and care, it's really important to kind of take this approach of thinking about the entire lifespan. We also show that the total number of DALYs, so again, this measure of kind of burden and health loss from these nervous system conditions has increased, over the past few decades. But if we look at age standardized rates for DALYs, these have decreased. So what that suggests to us is that the increase in DALYs is mainly driven by aging populations and population increase. For example, we know that many neurological conditions are more common later in life, such as dementia or stroke. But if you remove the effect of demographic changes, by doing this age standardization approach, we see that these overall decreases in age standardized rates mostly reflects less death from some of these conditions. So for example, less death now than a few decades ago from stroke or early life or infectious conditions such as neonatal encephalopathy or meningitis. So these downward trends are really driven by improved mortality outlook. But on the other hand, as we see better survival, for example, from improved care, we do then in some cases see more years lived with disability. So for example, if you get survival from, say, preterm birth that might not previously have occurred, we'll see more children with longer term neurological damage. And we're able to capture that in this analysis. And then finally, I think just to echo, again, a point that Tarun made, we were able to look at where this burden was kind of located geographically. And, we think it's really a key point that a lot of this burden is in, lower resource settings that don't have the kind of structures or neurological specialization in place to address the conditions.
So could you quickly run us through the limitations of your analysis?
Yeah, following on from what I said about the principles of how we approach making these estimates, lack of data is probably the number one issue. And particularly in low resource settings, we tend to have poor data sources. There are a few exceptions, things like epilepsy. We know more in low resource settings than we do in high income settings. But as a rule, we tend to have much fewer data sources in low resource settings where the burden is the greatest and therefore the implications are the most striking. Sometimes it's difficult to obtain data, and particularly with stricter privacy laws, quite a lot of data sources that potentially could help us a lot are much harder to access. But through our contacts with collaborators, we try to smooth the way and find opportunities where we can still access information that otherwise has been difficult for us to reach. Also, the principle that we want to make use of as many sources as possible means that there is inevitably measurement error in what we do, and not just because of how big the sample of a survey was, more importantly, the errors in measurement that affect the estimates. at least partially deal with that. We present all our estimates with uncertainty ranges, which take into account what in our statistical models is an assessment of the amount of measurement bias that we cannot explain otherwise. There are also particular areas that are rather weak points in research. So in terms of estimating disease burden, there's for almost every disease an enormous lack of information on the severity of the disease. And for us, this is important because we not only count how many people are affected, but we want to know how does it affect their lives and how much health loss do they experience, and then health loss relative to all sorts of other diseases that, that we measure in the global burden of disease. And this is a problem because then with a few sources, we often have to make an assumption that severity is the same everywhere you look, whereas that then ignores that hopefully with access to treatment, we can deal with the more serious cases and therefore change the pattern of severity. So that's it's probably a focus going forward that that we try and become more savvy at building in a gradient by access to treatment on how severe a disease is.
What are the real world implications of your data?
So, in terms of the data that Jamie talked about, the leading cause of dialysis and leading cause of death, I would broadly put there are three major real world implications. So, one is for advocacy. Second, I would say for policy making, and third, I would say for resource allocation. And let me give you some examples on for each of them. So for, I think in terms of the, looking at these huge numbers and these huge numbers that we see in low and middle income countries with high burden, lack of resources, I think there is much more prioritization in global health agenda, the public health agenda we need to do for neurological conditions than it is currently happening. So I think this is a call for global stakeholders, regional stakeholders, national stakeholders to take action. The second part is that, you know, when as we look at this data, we see there is increase happening, and some of this is because of the risk factors, increasing risk factor, demographic changes. So we need to have investments into appropriate policies, appropriate legislation. So, for example, I'm thinking about certain environmental risks that we see. In terms of policy making, also, this is also about how do we improve the service delivery. I mentioned earlier about, you know, lack of workforce capacity. So how we, and even if we start training neurologists today and everybody starts investing, we are not going to get the numbers that are needed. So we need to invest in training the primary healthcare providers and using the universal health coverage as the platform to get the services. The other part is Theo mentioned about limitations that we see with the data. And for me, it's also that how do we build up the, strengthen the routine health information systems to get better data about these conditions. Last point I would make here is about research. So this is that as we are thinking about the causes, the mechanisms, but also how these services are delivered, the implementation questions. This would be important for the funders of research across the world to think about which areas to fund, and how to translate that information better for policy making. So from our WHO's point of view, and also from other stakeholders, I think that this would lead to some shift in our thinking, some change in how do we move forward with prioritizing neurological conditions in the different agenda.
And what about the next steps in terms of GBD studies assessing neurological diseases?
So we're continuously trying to improve estimates for the global burden of disease study with each round where we update and publish our results. Of course, any expansion has resource implications, but beyond what Teo mentioned when he discussed some limitations of the work, I'll just highlight three things. First of all, we account for independent comorbidity between different conditions. So this idea that a given individual could have more than one of these conditions at the same time. But in the future, we would like to attempt to incorporate dependent comorbidity, which would recognize that some of these conditions that we analyze tend to be more likely to co-occur with each other. And we aren't capturing that currently. I think a second area that we'd like to really work on is to explicitly estimate some of the key conditions that are currently housed under a category that we call other neurological disorders. So we attempt to capture, to the best of our ability, all health loss in the GBD. And in some cases, we either, don't have sufficient data or haven't had the resources to explicitly look at every single condition. And those are housed under residual categories. In this case, this other neurological disorders category. For example, we're considering ways that we could start to explicitly look at conditions such as Huntington's disease, myasthenia gravis, or muscular dystrophy, which were currently housed under that grouping. And then finally, I think it would be really important to expand the number of modifiable risk factors that are assessed for neurological conditions. For example, it would be pretty interesting to look at sleep and neurodegenerative conditions, pesticides, impact on Parkinson's disease incidence, hypertension and dementia, et cetera. So there are certainly risk factors that we're not capturing right now. And since many neurological conditions don't have cures, at least currently, assessing whether there's strong evidence for their association with different modifiable risk factors is key for prevention and targeted interventions.
That sounds really interesting. I'm excited to see the future work. And finally, how are WHO planning to build on these data?
Short term, we will be using those findings in the forthcoming WHO Global Status Report on Neurology, which will come out later this year. And I've mentioned the Intersectoral Global Action Plan, or IGAP for short, which is really kind of like a decade long of concerted actions to improve care and support for neurological disorders. And what this Global Status Report will do is it will set the baseline for us to then monitor progress and actions throughout that decade. And so what we're doing in parallel to supplement those GBD data is we're collecting information from our member states on policies, services, their routine monitoring efforts, and also research efforts for neurological disorders. And all of that will feed into that global status report and allow us to take a current snapshot of where countries are, and then going forward, allow us to monitor the progress that we're collectively making. And maybe kind of just to finish off, kind of like on the importance of what this exercise actually was, is that one of the goals of IGAP is to reduce the stigma, the impact, the burden of neurological disorders, including associated mortality, morbidity, and disability. And for that, we really had to quantify at the beginning once what that burden was. And now building on that going forward, really measure, monitor how that burden will change over time, hopefully. So this paper was really a huge step forward for us in that regard. And that makes it even more exciting for us to have been involved.
Well, thank you very much, Jamie Steinmetz, Katrin Sear, Teo Vos and Taran Dura, for taking the time to talk with us today. And thank you for listening to this episode of In Conversation With.
You can read the new GBD analysis of the burden of disorders affecting the nervous system online now at thelancet.com. And you can subscribe to In Conversation With, The Lancet Neurology, wherever you usually get your podcasts. Thank you.